You're listening to Wisdom of the Ages, the show that taps into the many expressions of universal, ancestral, and personal wisdom to ignite evolutionary consciousness.
Welcome, friends and mystical travelers. This is Anne Kate Sullivan, host of Wisdom of the Ages, where we invite the sacred into modern day reality. So each week I offer stories, interviews, and spiritual monologues to inspire, heal, and uplift the soul. And today's episode, Called to Service, is truly uplifting. So if you feel called, you can listen to many more spiritual episodes on superpowerexperts.com/wisdomoftheages. And you can find more uplifting books and audiobooks on infinitelightpublishing.com. So many of us might ask ourselves how we can save the world. And that will be one of the questions I will ask my superhero guest today, Mark Redman, who is Executive Director of Spectrum Youth and Family Services in Burlington, Vermont. So several years ago, I had the opportunity to visit Spectrum Youth and was truly touched by the way in which Mark Redman and his team show up for young people and many members. I mean, there are many members that are actually touched. It's the young, but so many people are touched by what's going on there. The buildings were clean. I saw medical and dental assistants on site. I saw really lovely dorm rooms, and I met many bright-eyed youths who were grateful to be at Spectrum Youth. So we might think that someone who has a food and a roof over their head, you know, that's enough. That's all we need to do. But listening to Mark Redman's new book, an audiobook. I listened to it on Audible, and it's called. So easy to remember. I would just go ahead and download it. It's so inspiring. Anyway, listening to it, I began to get a glimpse of how challenging this work really is. And this is affecting everybody globally now. So it's an important book. So in this Wisdom of the Ages episode, we'll talk about what it is to be called to service and then the reality of what it takes to help people who have come from broken homes get sober and start their lives again. So another thing that really touched me was the way Mark Redman and his team at Spectrum Youth prepared people for the workforce, and that youths often need support well into their 20s. So I think there's some serious messages in here that we all need to know about. So now let me introduce my guest, Mark Redman, who has worked selflessly in the field of caring for the homeless and at-risk youth for over 40 years. Welcome, Mark.
Hello, Anne. It's so great to talk to you and to be on your show. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy that you're here. And since I've been listening to your Audible book, I feel like you're with me. I think there's a transmission with the book, truly.
Yeah, it must have been. I wasn't going to record the book, but somebody said, no, audiobooks are really, really powerful today and popular. You've got to do an audiobook. So that's why I did it. And I'm glad I did.
I'm glad you did too. And I'm glad it's your voice.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because a lot of authors, you know, I've talked to people not like, oh, we hire different people. And it's like, nah, this is my story, you know, and I want to tell it in my voice. So I'm glad I made that decision.
I am too. I mean, I can see if you write a fiction book that you might want actors playing the roles. So that does make sense to me. But if it's your memoir and also just what you went through, I had no idea. I mean, I visited you in Burlington, Vermont that time and met you. And I thought it was all lovely. I had no clue what you'd been through. So
even my mother said that.
Oh my goodness.
I said it to her and she was like, I can't believe what you went through at Brooklyn. I can't believe what you went through, you know, when you're trying to start that charter school. I was like, yeah, Mom, I kept you in the dark. I didn't want you to know.
It might have been better in Times Square too. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah. Ugly.
I know. Wow. To some serious stuff. But then, you know, at the end, you get to hear the success story. So that, I was glad I got to the end there because I was like, oh, I hope there's some good news here. So pretty soon I have to stop for an ad break, but just really quickly, right before we do this, is there hope?
Is there hope? Yes, there's definitely hope. There's tremendous hope out there, you know? And I was a big fan of the late John Lewis. And he used to say, you know, as much as oppression is out there and racism and prejudice is still so much more goodness in people and so much more hope that's out there. So I really believe that. I believe that's why I wrote this book, and that's why I tell stories. You know, I've been in The Moth, another podcast, and I had a show on Broadway one night. And that's part of my message, that as dire as things can be for people, there is always hope. And sometimes we have to cling to that hope. But a lot of my role and the people I work with is to encourage young people who are close to despair, encourage them that they can move ahead in their lives and make a difference in the world.
And you really do that. You are a superhero. I totally believe that. So where can people find your audio book?
You know, it's on markredmondbooks.com. You go in there and there's 10, 12 different ways to read or listen to that book. But it's also, you know, Audible is the most popular version. It's Audible, Mark Redmond called. Very easy title to remember.
It's called Called.
I wanted one word, you know. So there. But it's also Barnes & Noble, Amazon. It's on everything. So, yeah, you should be able to find it pretty easily.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. And if people want to find out about Spectrum Youth and Family Services, where do they go?
SpectrumVT.org. Also pretty easy. And you'll see our website, a beautiful website listing all the different things that we do to help young people who are struggling.
Okay. So that's beautiful. And so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Tonya Don Rekla, Executive Director of Superpower Experts and creator of the Superpower Network. Welcome and thank you for making us your go-to place for inspired content, training, and community. The network is so much more than a place for amazing content. It's step one on the path to unlock your superpowers. Listen to one episode daily on the Superpower Network and attune yourself to inspired conversations, higher vibrational living, and much, much more. In step two, you learn with us by watching one of our inspirational videos each week from the I Am series. And when you're ready, come grow in community. Our superpower programs offer a unique experience for those ready to harness their superpowers to change themselves, their lives, and ultimately, the world. Go to superpowerexperts.com and take the next step on your path today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. This is Anne Kate Sullivan, host of Wisdom of the Ages, and today we're talking with brilliant guest Mark Redmond about supporting youths today and how we can help. So I think this is a very, very important topic. I mentioned to you before we started that I drove across the country recently, and I drove through Los Angeles and was shocked. I was just shocked by the number of tents and people living under bridges and in parks and lining the streets. And how do we even begin?
Yeah, it can be overwhelming if you let it overwhelm you. We certainly face tremendous challenges in America, especially in the cities regarding homelessness, you know. But I think what we do at Spectrum is something that works. We will take young people who are homeless as young as 17. And they can start out in the winter. You know, Vermont winters are rough, as you know, you visited here. It can be below freezing for months on end. And so in the winter, there's a church nearby that lets us use the church hall. We put 10 beds in there during the winter just so nobody freezes to death. But then if they do well, they move over to what we call the landing. And that's 8 beds in one facility. And now, you know, we're going to ask you to look for work and to go to school and things like that. And if you do well, then we move you to the front of the building and 8 apartment units, single room occupancy. And now you can stay for as long as 3 years. Nobody ever stays that long. They usually stay about 1.5 years. And now, you know, they will pay a little bit of rent. We'll help them start a bank account. We'll teach them how to drive a car. We will teach them how to, maybe if they want to go to college or a training program. And so they're really, I always tell people I was lucky. I had parents teach me these things. These kids don't. So we are going to really focus on what we call independent living skills and then help them. They actually get what's called a Section 8 voucher at the end of that so they can get subsidized housing. So I like that model, Anne, because it's almost like this conveyor belt where a young person can start off in the church hall. They move over to the landing. They move over to the apartments. In fact, there's somebody on my board of directors now who I report to, who 15 years ago was a teenage girl who was addicted to cocaine, who had tried to commit suicide. and lived with us at Spectrum and did very well. Now has her college degree, a very responsible job. And she's one of my bosses. I report to her. So there are many young people we've seen like that who have come through Spectrum and made very positive changes in their life. So I think what we do works, and it actually, we're starting to replicate it. We just expanded to another city about 40 minutes north of Burlington, because we know this is not the only city in Vermont where there are homeless young people.
Mm-hmm. Well, all the way across the United States. Well, probably the globe now. So
yes,
have an amazing model. You do have an amazing model. I don't know if people, I guess people can go on the website and just see what you're doing. Would that be the best way for people to just see? Because I was just so impressed, like, by the cleanliness, and just by the friendliness of the people that I encountered. So, I mean, and reading, listening to your book, I went, well, this was a long time coming. I mean, you definitely had your learning curve. I mean, the amount of people that you had to deal with, and all these, getting your nose almost sliced off. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah. That's
jeez.
Yeah. That was in there. The nose story was in there. Well, the cleanliness thing, you know, I had a good teacher early on when I entered this field, and he said, most of these kids have grown up in poverty, chaos, and disorder, you know? So when they come to a place like Spectrum, it doesn't need to be the Ritz-Carlton, but it needs to be nice. It needs to be clean. It needs to be orderly. We need to feed them nourishing food, and it needs to be served on a certain time, you know? Like, they need structure. They've lacked structure in their life. But the other piece, which you point out, is they also need the emotional nurturance, right? Mm-hmm. So we really try and hire people who are compassionate, who are caring, who can really, you know, relate to these young people, because it is important. The food and the clothing, the medical care, that's all really important. But just as important, if not more, is that ability to really break through. You know, somebody said to me years ago, when you and I work through a tough neighborhood, we put on that tough swagger, that don't mess with me attitude. These kids, unfortunately, wear that attitude 24/7 because they have been so traumatized and so mistreated throughout life. They wear that shield permanently. And it's my job and your job, through compassion and kindness and love, to try and break through that shield to reach the real person within and to touch them.
And maybe melt it more than break it.
That's a better metaphor. Melt it.
And it sounds, I mean, you have done that so many times. I don't know if you have a story you'd like to share from your book or from your life.
Sure. There's one story, a young man and I sent it to him and he loved it. And yeah, he came to us, a very dysfunctional family. Mother kind of dropped him off in our drop-in center. He lived in our shelter. He moved to our apartments. Very good work ethic, always worked. And then he left us and he had his own apartment. And there's a few kids I still can't stay in touch with. And then he always had a job, Ann, but it was like minimum wage, McDonald's, you know. And he liked cars. So I said, you know, let's go visit the Vermont Technical College. They have a good auto shop there. I mean, you can really make a nice living. It's a 2-year program. You get your degree. So he went with me. We looked at the campus. We came back and I dropped him off. And I said, what do you think? And he said, I don't know. I'm really nervous. I don't want to give up my job. I don't want to give up my Section 8 housing. He said, but I am grateful. We went and looked at it. He said, thanks for doing this, Mark. I'm not used to people doing nice things like this for me. Mm-hmm. And gosh, Ann, it was such an innocent thing to say, but it really affected me. First of all, I thought, what did I do? I took an afternoon off, right, to go and look at a college. My parents drove up and down the East Coast, you know, and did it 4 more times with my siblings, you know? So and he's not used to people doing nice things like this. And I've often thought, if I walked into our drop-in center and said, how many of you kids are used to people doing nice things for you? Not a lot of hands are going to go up. But if I said, how many of you are used to domestic violence? How many of you are used to alcoholism, drug addiction, being hungry, sleeping in a parking garage? A lot of hands would go up. So that young man did decide to apply to college. He got into the college. I helped him get more financial aid. And 3 years later, it took him a year later, but he got his, he invited me, a priest he knew and another Spectrum staffer to go to his, we were his family for his graduation. And I took him to breakfast right before. And he looked at me and he said, I'm graduating from college next week. I am the first male in my family not to be serving a long-term prison sentence. He said,
oh, wow.
My grandfather killed a man. My father stole cars for a living. My brother is serving a long-term prison sentence, and I'm graduating from college.
So, and he did have, didn't he have an altercation sort of halfway through?
He did. I was going to kill him. At one point. His temper got a hold of him, and he got in a fist fight with, and he was an RA in the dorm. So he lost his RA thing. And a couple of times I thought, oh my gosh, he's come so far. But I got to give him credit. He managed to hang in there. And not only in the book it has that he got his associate's degree. I was there for the graduation. He then went on and got his bachelor's degree in business and was named the commencement speaker for the graduation.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
So that's amazing.
I sent him the book. I said, you're in here. You know, I changed your name. And he texted me right away. I love the book. I love what you wrote about me. It was very touching. So that's just one example, you know, of somebody who really came from a very difficult family situation. And we were able to really help him along. And there's always bumps, right? It's never smooth progress, progress, progress. It's, you know, three steps forward, two steps back. But he made it. And I consider him to be a very close friend today.
It's such a great story. Yeah, I was in a meeting the other day. And heard from, this was from a university study, that depression is up by 60% and the suicide rate is higher than ever. And I just broke my heart to hear this, you know, and I just want to know, like, what can I do to help? And maybe, you know, a lot of people are listening now. What can we all do? Because it's hard to know what to do sometimes.
It's really hard to know what to do. I mean, the biggest crisis we face at Spectrum right now, there's homelessness, yeah, but the mental health and addiction situation has gotten so much worse among young people. Mm-hmm. We're now up to, I think we have 6 licensed mental health and addiction counselors, and I have a waiting list, I checked today, of 47 youth who, they're not homeless, all of them, who are trying to get help with emotional disorders and addiction. And I've said to my staff, we need to hire, you know, a lot of the graduate schools now are graduating clinical counselors. So I said, we've got to hire more, and then we've got to get a building, figure out some way to put them. So, and the suicide rate is up, and the overdose rate, and the deaths by overdose rate is back up too, Ann. So there's a tremendous amount of sadness out there and emotional disorders and addiction. And, you know, I feel honor bound and duty bound as director of Spectrum. We've got to respond. It's not right to put somebody on a waiting list who really needs that kind of help. So that's my goal, you know, right now, to hire more. But what can we all do? We can all, you know, I'll say to friends, listen, your son or daughter is addicted to drugs or extremely depressed. I am not a licensed mental health counselor, but I've done this work for 40 years. If you want me to talk to that, your young person, you know, to at least encourage them, or I'll talk to you and see what you can do, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of these young people do need professional trained help. It's what do we do in the meantime until we can find the right person and get them in there.
I know we do need community. It seems to me that, of course, we need therapy. We need food, clothing, shelter, obviously, and healthy food, not junk food. We need. Yes. I mean, anyone can go to AA and become sober, but you have to get in the room and you have to find a mentor. You know, so that at least that is available for everybody.
Right.
But it seems that we. Right. But we need love. I think that maybe AI is part of the crisis, but it's, you know, and also I think the media is pretty negative, and there's this, you know, this thing where, oh, it's the end of the world. And I always say to people, well, I see a renaissance. I don't know what you're saying, but I see a renaissance coming. I mean, after every plague, what comes next? A renaissance. Right. So
history has shown that. And, you know, we did the plague. The pandemic was terrible in so many regards. But then we saw people step up and hurrah. I'll tell you this. So my staff, Ann, when the pandemic has hit us so fast, and you know, we were like, nobody had PPE or masks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we had two kids get symptoms who lived in our shelter the third day.
Oh, wow.
So we were panicked. How did it transmit? Nobody had masks, you know? So I went that night and I went to see one of my workers and I said, how are you? Are you okay? And all she could talk about was the one young man who had symptoms, or there were two who had symptoms. And one, she said, he's already very depressed. I'm so worried about that young man. So it's funny. I just wrote her an email a week ago and said, you know, when the pandemic started, I was so impressed. You weren't even worried about yourself. I kept saying, how are you? Your focus was on this young man. So we found a place for these two young men to go. And luckily, they didn't have COVID. They had other symptoms. I also said to my staff, when this whole thing started, I said, none of you are to blame for what's happened here. So if you are too afraid to come into work in our shelter or drop-in center, don't come in and I will still pay you and I won't even make you take a health leave. And not one person took me up on that end. Not one.
Really?
Not one.
So they weren't frightened. Amazing.
No, they were frightened. And then I said, if you do come in, I will pay you hazard pay. We'll pay you time and a half. I'm not sure where the money's going to come from, but we will do it. And we did that up until like 2 weeks ago. We were the only nonprofit, at least that I know of in Vermont, that continued to do that. And our people came through for us, and they were there for those kids. We had one staff who did get COVID. We don't know if it was from work or elsewhere, and she's okay now. I'm going to see her today at 4 o'clock, in fact. But I've so admired our people, you know, that that they didn't back down, and we were fortunate we were able to get on the vaccine list pretty early. So anyway, so you're right. It's been a terrible time, but we also saw a lot of heroic actions. And an incredible, I mean, think of all those first responders, right? Who kept going in, right? Nurses,
right.
They're all risking their own lives. So it gives that, when I see that, it gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my goodness. So, okay. So that just shows us how important community is, love, sticking through it together, you know, and helping each other.
That's right. That's what I tell people. People say to me, have you done this work for 40 years? I said, listen, it's not a sole person, you know, it's all about building a team. You know, it's building a team of compassionate, caring people. No one person, me included, can carry the load. I've tried to do that at times and almost burnt out. So the key is, and also, you know, for me personally, taking time for meditation and for prayer and for exercise and for my relationship with my wife and sons, all of those things. And that's what I tell our staff, too. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You've got to take time off. You've got to take care of yourself. You know, we don't want you working double shifts, but you've got to take care of yourself first.
Well, you really go into that in the book. I had no idea what you had been through personally. So you learned it the hard way, right?
I did. I have a whole chapter that I experienced very serious depression after I got divorced in 1994 and, you know, lost about 40 pounds. I couldn't sleep. I could barely function. And I went and got professional help. You know, I went and saw a psychiatrist and I had a therapist and I went on medication. So, and that chapter, even though it's just one chapter out of a 26 chapter book, has gotten more attention. Mm-hmm. I've had friends call me and said, I know a guy and he's like you. He's an Irish Catholic, you know, just keep a stiff upper lip. You don't admit any weaknesses. And I'm sending him your book. And I'm going to tell him to read that chapter because I know he's depressed and he won't get help. And maybe if he reads that chapter and saw what you did, it'll help him. So, as I've said to people, gosh, even if that one person gets the kind of help he needs, you know, it was worth writing the book. But I think there is a big stigma, especially men, especially Irish Catholic men like me. And, you know, to say, no, there are times in our life when we're weak and we need help. And there should be no stigma or shame to that.
Exactly. You go get the help you need, and then you learn what you need to learn, and you come back, and what happens? You're wiser, and you help other people. You come back with more compassion.
Yes. It made me a more compassionate person. It actually has made me a better worker in my field going through what I went through. There's no doubt in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that can happen sometimes. You go to therapy and here's this person who's kind of removed, who hasn't been through what you've been through, and it just doesn't work. There's nothing that takes place. There's no counter transference. There's no healing that occurs.
Right.
And it seems like, I mean, I think that was one thing that really touched me about Spectrum Youth also, is that I think most of the staff members, had all of them been through the program, or a lot of them?
Some of them have. Some have been, you know, were actually years ago were youth or had difficult experiences themselves, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe mm-hmm. got help at a different place. So not mm-hmm. all. And then, you know, we look for people, we want to see people who have some background in this, maybe, you know, some education. Most of them, you do have to have at least a bachelor's degree. If you're going to be a clinical counselor, you really need a master's degree. Many of them interned with us from the University of Vermont. And if they did mm-hmm. a really good job, we'll hire them on, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are the folks we look for. And I don't know, again, you can tell from what I've said, I really admire them and mm-hmm. really want to support them. They're the one, not me, they're the ones who are in the trenches there really dealing with kids who have gone through a lot of trauma.
Mm-hmm. So I was curious too, when you, let's say in your book, you talk about the fact, I think when you first started one of the clinics, the kids had to leave when they were 18, and you said, no, they have to have access to us until they're, I think you said 22 or 23.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you want to address that, but I thought that was, because it does seem like that period of time between 18 and 22 is really pivotal, because this is when you're finding what you want to do with your life and your career and how you express yourself. And it's challenging to figure that out.
That is such a key period. And so, right, I came up here in November of 2002 to interview for the job. And in the interview, there were social workers on the interview team, and they kept saying, we have to get these kids ready by 18. So I finally stopped the interview and said, what's the big deal about 18? Said, oh, in Vermont, if you're in foster care, living with foster parents or in a group home, you have to leave on your 18th birthday. And I thought, first of all, I was stunned. I'm like, Vermont, Bernie Sanders, it's progressive paradise up here. Mm-hmm. And I said, listen, my son is 17. He's an honor student at a Jesuit high school. And if I said to him on his 18th birthday, happy birthday, now you leave my house and find your own place to live and support yourself, I don't think he would make it. But we're talking about kids who really don't, maybe they have a high school diploma, probably not, and really don't have functional families. So kicking them out the door at 18 is a huge setup for failure. So I said, I hope you hire me for this job, but even if you don't, you need to change that. Because in New York at the time, it was 23. Connecticut, mm-hmm. they could stay until 22. So anyway, they did hire me for the job, and I had a million things to do at Spectrum. I write about a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But I really got to, it really bothered me watching kids sent out the door at 18. Then I found out, Anne, 36% of all Vermont prisoners had been in the foster care system. So we had a foster care to prison pipeline. So I would say to legislators, you think you're saving money by ending foster care at 18, but you're not, because they're popping back up in your prison system shortly afterwards at a huge human cost, not to mention the financial cost. Right. So it took me 4 years, and I just went around the state and met with legislators, and I'd never lobbied before. I spent time testifying, and we got a bill. And when I heard the governor was going to sign the bill, I said to the commissioner, well, the governor's going to sign that at Spectrum, because nobody did more than us to pass this legislation. So we did. I pictured my office of Governor Douglas signing the bill with a young person right next to him. So, yeah, so I view my job as not only caring for young people who are struggling, but also affecting public policy and legislation so that we have the right systems in place that will help them. And that legislation has helped so many people. You know, that was in 2007 we passed that bill. So that was a very, very important chapter of when I was at Spectrum.
Really, really important. Globally. And, you know, I think what's interesting about Vermont too is it gets really cold. So if you're on the street through the winter in Vermont, I don't think you're going to make it. So that might be one reason you'll go into a clinic, is just basic survival. In California, you could live on the street year round, but you know, it's just such a, it breaks my heart when I go out to see it. And obviously we need new, we just have to rethink all of it. I remember it, when I lived in London in the 80s, it was after Maggie Thatcher had closed the coal mines, and there were so many people living on the streets.
Right.
I was afraid to walk under the bridge at Waterloo to go to school. And it was interesting when they changed the policies and they made housing available for people and more medicine available for people, the streets cleaned up and it became very safe.
Right. So, I mean, we actually know what to do.
We know what to do. We have to do it.
Do we have the political will, right, to do? And I think the pandemic has exposed so many of the things that were there before. And we can't really hide away from them and say we don't know about them. And you're right. We need affordable housing. We need supportive services. We need addiction treatment on demand. You know, we can now see, and there are places where we're starting to do these things. Vermont is, it's good because it's so small and we can actually try. I'll tell you one thing. We may try it Spectrum now. So you can probably relate because you have children who are over 18. 40% of American parents do help their children financially in some way, even after college. You know, they help with their income. Maybe they help them get their first car. They help them with their first our kids at Spectrum do not have that. Okay. Right. They primarily come from poverty. I'm thinking, I have a meeting today about this, of taking the money, some of the money we've got, and saying to young people as they're ready to leave Spectrum, they've been in our shelter, they've gotten counseling, they have a job, they've gone to school. We're thinking for 18 months, when you leave us, we will give you $1,000 a month, okay?
And interesting.
We're not going to stand over your shoulder, look how every penny is spent. But we are then going to measure the outcomes, how many were able to get their first apartment, how many were able to enroll in school, how many were able to get their car. You know, in Vermont, the public transportation is terrible. It's almost non-existent. So if you don't have a car, forget it. So we're actually thinking, let's try this with, say, 20 young people and try it for 18 months. And let's see, you know, let's see how the results are. So it's all part of a continuum. You know, how can we help these young people get the kind of help? I definitely have that kind of help. You know?
Oh, I did too. I did too.
Oh, yeah.
absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And I helped my son is 33 now. I definitely helped him when he graduated from college. And I'm sure we'll help my son Liam when he graduates from college 4 years from now. Mm-hmm. So this is not abnormal for families like ours. And I would like to see us try and do this with young people who come from poverty.
I know, and I guess the concern is, well, if they have money, will they just go spend it on drugs? So I guess that's going to be the test here is, are you going, because it is so difficult to break a family pattern. I mean, I come from a really great family, but there's still things we're all working on, you know, and I can see how hard it is to break these patterns. And if you come from a dysfunctional family, my goodness, I mean, talk about structure and
It's very hard, you know, when I talk, well, let me go back to the prior point. So there's a group that has done this, what's called DCT, direct cash transfer. They've done it in Georgia and they had Emory University study it. University of Chicago studied it. And you know what the results are? They're not spending the money on drugs and alcohol.
Oh, okay.
They're spending it on things they need like rent and car payments, so far. But we'll see, you know. I mean, I was dubious at first because I have the same, you know, wow, I think it's just been a party. But I really, the results so far. Now, I think you've said that when you come from, like, you're right, so many of the kids, I've talked to so many kids and I will say to them, you know, or they'll mention their parents and I'll say, oh, so you do have a father around. And they will say to me, Ann, well, yeah, he is my biological father, but he's not really a father to me. You know, I think of another young man. He aged out of Spectrum. At some point, 22, 23, you know, they age out. And I made the mistake of saying to him, so, you know, you must have some family you can go live with, right? And he said, not really. It's really you people at Spectrum who've been my family, you know? I even told that one tragic story in my book of a young man who was in the Marines and he took his life. You know, he killed himself after he left us and he left the Marines. And somebody from, after I went to the funeral, and some neighbor called me. I don't know how she got my number. And she said, I know it said in the obituary in the paper, he leaves behind the loving family of, but she said, I can tell you there never was a loving family there. Yeah. And if that boy had a loving family at all, it was you people at Spectrum. You were the loving family. And I've often said it was so tragic and I felt so bad, you know, what happened. But at least I do have some satisfaction that he knew he was loved at mm-hmm. some point in his life. He knew he was loved while he lived here with us, you know?
Yeah. And there was another story that was so touching too about the boy with the disabilities who...
Yeah, a young man in a wheelchair. I think he had spina bifida and, you know, had kind of been in foster care his whole life, a lot of sadness in his life. And then he moved here and he moved with a foster parent in Burlington. And we worked with him and I met him and his life really took, it went in such great directions then, you know, even though he was in a wheelchair, he joined a sled hockey team and he learned how to swim. And he did all these things and he was crossing the street in his wheelchair and he got nipped by a car and he died in his sleep that night. And same thing, I went to that funeral and it was so sad, but person after person got up at that microphone and talked about how in the last year of that boy's life, it was like the best year he ever had. And what a great attitude. He didn't let the wheelchair and his spina bifida slow him down one bit, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was a tragic ending. But I also felt like, well, he did know he was cared for and appreciated and loved, at least in that tail end of his life, you know?
Yeah, it was a very touching story. Oh, my goodness. And there's so many other stories in the book. It's amazing that you've really hung there throughout all of this. Oh, gosh. You have to be very strong, very strong. And your Catholic faith probably really supports you in that, too.
It does. My spiritual life, you know, I have certain spiritual practices that I practice every day. And then I try and go on retreat to a monastery once a year, you know, mm-hmm. and then exercise I consider to be very key. It's all those things. And also realizing it's just impossible to be successful every single time, you know.
Sure.
And yet you may see somebody and think, oh, my gosh, what a terror. I saw a young man on the street last week. And he had lived with Spectrum like 12 years ago. And then I lost touch with him. Then I ran into him at 6 a.m. at an adult warming shelter. And I thought, oh, this is terrible. You don't want to see one of your former youth living in a warming shelter. You know, what a terrible outcome. But then I ran, he waves to me on the street a week ago. And he recognized me. I recognize him. And we're going to have lunch next Tuesday with him. I know who his former foster parent is. And he ended up okay.
I'm good.
So many times I've been surprised. I thought, oh, it wasn't such a great outcome. And then I find out, you know what? It turned out okay. So you have to have faith and you have to believe that the seeds that you've planted may actually sprout later. It may take a while, but they may sprout later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worked with a woman in England who was like a saint for a while, and I would go into these hospitals with her, and I would say, how can you do this? And she says, because you have to throw the seeds into the darkness. That's where they grow.
It's true. It's mm-hmm. true. It's mm-hmm. really true. It's really true.
So what would you say to the listeners today? You've put up a whole... I mean, you have helped thousands of people, but just from a very, you know, simple, on a very simple level, how can we just start reaching out to those next to us and helping?
You know, one of the things we do at Spectrum, we have a mentoring program and we look for volunteers and we say to people, you know, you're not the therapist, you're not the social worker, you know, you're a stable, reliable, caring presence in a young person's life. And you're going to meet with that one person an hour a week. And, you know, if a kid who likes bowling and you like bowling, or a kid who likes fishing, you like fishing, you know, because what are you? You're just that stable, caring presence. And that is what they have lacked more than anything else, you know. And I always say, I joke, we lure them in, you know, just 1 hour. It's just 1 year. Make it 1 year. And, of course, almost all of them do it for some 10 years, 12 years, you know. And I think anybody can do that. And there are mentoring programs all over America right now, you know? So that is a very concrete way. And then people come, you know, we have a drop-in center where you visited and kids can get a nice hot lunch and a nice hot dinner and people volunteer. In fact, you made a good point earlier. So I cook once a month. I go over because it's very easy in my job to get subsumed in budgets and strategic planning and fundraising. And I make myself go over there and I make dinner for those kids. And it's funny, I saw a boy the other day and he said, "When are you coming back and making salmon again, Mr. Edmund? I love that salmon." So, you know, I just don't make burgers is fine, whatever. But like, I really try and make stuff that's healthy for them and it's nourishing for them. And it's maybe a little different, you know, I make risotto, something that maybe they haven't had before. And people love to do that. We have a meal train we set up here in our new drop-in center in St. Albans too. So that's another thing. There are soup kitchens and food pantries all around America, you know, but, and then I sit down and eat. It's not just serve the food and go. I like to sit down then and sit at the table and talk to them. You learn a lot. You know, you learn a lot. So food, as you know, can be a big connector, right? It can be a spiritual connector for us in so many ways. And just sharing a meal together is a huge way to connect with people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love the fact, too, that you're Irish Catholic, but you let anyone, you're working with all sorts of people, all kinds of backgrounds. And that's so wonderful that you're that open to whatever the origin story is for somebody, I mean, they believe.
That's how I feel with the people I work with. You know, I don't wear my Christian beliefs on my sleeve. If you come in here, there's a painting of Oscar Romero. He was a bishop who worked with the poor in South America. And I have a picture of Mother Teresa. But other than that, it's funny. Yeah, one of the stories is a young man, he started to say to me, "Oh, I'm going to my church, my church, my church." So I finally said, I usually don't ask about religion. I said, "You know, which faith?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm converting to Catholicism and becoming a Catholic on Easter Sunday, you know?" I said, "Oh, okay, I'll go to that, you know?" So I actually went to the Easter Vigil and his mother was there. And she turned to me and said, she whispered, she said, "Everything to my son here. It means everything, you know?" So it was really nice. But you're right. We're open to all faiths or no faith or tradition or whatever spiritual background people come from. You know, we're open to all of that. It's the way we should be.
No, that's really beautiful. And it seems like, you know, I guess if I think about the most positive masculine qualities that we have in our culture, it's men who love and organize and protect, which is, which we need more of, but you're one of those people. And the feminine qualities too, just accept embracing all people and loving and feeding and nurturing. And not that we have to, you know, necessarily put them in any gender, but we just need all of these qualities, this love and care and nurturing, but also the people who are truth tellers and will say, "Look, you know, you're drinking too much. Cut it out. You know, you're not gonna go down the right path if you do this."
Exactly. You know? But it takes courage to do that, and also it takes, how do you say it in a compassionate way, you know, in a non-shaming way, you know? I sat across from a young man recently who's addicted to meth, you know, and I said to him, "I remember what you used to be like, you know, I remember that." And I said, "Do you need," he said, "I need to go to rehab, but I'm not ready to go to rehab." And I said, "Well, I'm going to stay in touch with you. I have your text number and fit, you know, and when you're ready to go, I'll go with you. And if you want me to go with you to a 12-step meeting, I'll do that too." You know? So it's being able to say to him, like, you know, "I'm not going to shame you into going. I'm glad you're admitting you need to go. And when you think you're ready to go, I'll be there to take you." So he knows that. And I pray for him every day. And I pray that he will come to the point where he's really ready to go. And I'll be there with him.
That's beautiful. I think just that presence, that strong presence and strong support. I mean, I always thought of you as unshakable. And now I know that you've been challenged too, which makes you even more of a superhero.
none of us is unshakable. Anybody looks unshakable, they're just hiding. No, how do we, you know, Brene Brown has written so beautifully and spoken so beautifully about vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and how we train, it's a shame how we train men and socialize men. You can't be vulnerable. You've got to be tough. You've got, you know, and I think that has really caused a lot of harm to men, you know, mm-hmm. and what is yeah. often behind, you know, what we see in terms of violence and domestic violence and shootings and all that stuff. It's this facade. And I think we have to encourage men to like, no, yes, you can. We're not saying you be weak. We're not saying you be a walking doormat. We're not saying that. But we are saying we know that you have feelings and there is compassion and tenderness and care inside of you. And we have to recognize that and honor that too.
Yeah, I do believe that. And from all the mental health studies that I've seen recently, inquiry, self-inquiry, but actually inquiry with another person was the main thing that seemed to help, which kind of surprised me. And that's really just sitting down with someone and listening and asking who they are and what's happening and how they're awakening. I mean, that it's so simple. And I do believe we can do that with anyone we meet. Just listen.
We can care. Do that. There's mm-hmm. so much healing. Just allowing someone to tell their story, just allow them to talk, to tell about what their story has been and what their life has been and what's happened to them. That itself is incredibly healing. And to be the person who receives that is just an incredible gift to the other person.
Absolutely. So everyone listening can do that. You can just today find someone and ask them about their story and listen with an open heart. We can all do that. It's free and it's powerful.
Exactly.
Yeah. So is there a part of your book, a little maybe short passage of your book that you'd like to read?
Yes. So, you know, I had my one person show on Broadway, which was great. And read you. It was one night, but it sold out.
Yay. That sounds amazing.
and the theater was right around the corner from where I used to work with homeless kids 20 years ago in Times Square. It was right. I used to walk by that theater every day. And here I was 39 years later, back at it. Isn't that amazing?
I love it. I love how things come back around again. Yeah.
Here's what I said at the end of my show. And I put it in my book, the last chapter. I said, I tell these stories because I believe they give people hope. Hope that people can change and they can change for the better. People can overcome their addictions. They can overcome their wounds. They can heal. But it just doesn't happen by chance. It happens because of qualities like perseverance, resilience, dedication, and courage. And it takes something else. It takes other people who are willing to leave their bubbles, to leave their comfort zones, and reach out in a spirit of compassion, care, and love. And when you have those two things in combination, that's when amazing, incredible, miraculous things happen. So if you leave here tonight with any message at all, I hope it is that.
Oh, my heart just burst open there. Oh my goodness. What a beautiful message. Oh,
Thank you.
Very powerful. I hope that play, I hope they'll put the play back on again.
Yeah, right.
So we could all go see it. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a treat. My mom came, 89 years old. She came in for my show. It was great. It was really great.
Oh, so, well, thank you for all the amazing work you have done and are doing. You're such an inspiration to us all.
Thank you, Anne. Thanks for saying that. And I love your podcast. I'm going to keep listening. And thank you so much for having me on. It's really an honor. It truly is.
So is there just a last, I know you read the book, but just a last spontaneous message for the listeners?
Oh, that, you know, we're living in troubled times, but we've always lived in troubled times, right?
Right, yeah.
You're right. You know, during the pandemic, I read some of the writings of Julian of Norwich, who was a mystical, lived in the 14th century, and the Black Plague was going on. You know, her signature line was, all will be well and all shall be well and all manner of things shall be well. And she faced incredibly dark times. And she was right. And I think all manner of things will be well in our country and in our planet But it's also going to take kind, comparing, dedicated people to help us get there. But we will get there, and I'm very optimistic and hopeful about that. So that's my final message, Ann.
I love it. I love it. And it's true. And sometimes, I think sometimes, I mean, I don't know why human beings have to do this, but sometimes we have to suffer in order to wake up and change. And then the awakening can be powerful and beautiful. So my hope is that we'll see just waves of change, positive change happening across the globe.
Yeah, that's my hope too. And I really do believe it's going to happen. I really do.
I do too. So Mark, one more time, how can people get your book?
Sure. So it is on, my website is M-A-R-K, Mark with the K, Redmond Books, S, because I intend to write more, markredmondbooks.com. And then, it's on Amazon, it's on Audible, it's on Nook, it's on every possible, but if you go to my site, you'll see, order the ebook, order the audio book, order the paperback book, gives all different ways. So yeah, that's the best way. And I picked one word, called.
right.
It's hard to mess that up. It's hard to mess that up.
That's true. And I like it too, because I think we are called onto missions. We are called to help others. Our heart.
We are. And that's the secret. The happiest people in the world, those who do figure out what is that call, what is that thing, mm-hmm. that's really, that you have, that it's going to tap into the gifts that you have and it's going to be of service to the world. So you're absolutely right. We are all called.
Beautiful. We'll just end on that lovely high note. So thank you, Mark, for all of the wisdom that you have shared with us. And thank you to the listeners who've joined in as well. May your lives be filled with love, light, and today I'm going to say compassion. So you've been listening to Ann Kate Sullivan, host of Wisdom of the Ages. And if you want to view my books or find out more about Infinite Light Publishing, please go to infinitelightpublishing.com. So until we meet again, may wisdom reveal its secrets to you, one message at a time. Many blessings.
Are you ready to discover your superpowers? Go now to superpowerexperts.com and take the superpower quiz today.